ओम ज्ञानतिमिरां दस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। नम ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते राधानाथस्वामिनिति नामिने। नम ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Hare Krishna. I am very happy and honored to be able to participate in this 70th Vyasa Puja ceremony of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. It was a pleasure listening to the offerings given by many of the devotees, and especially the last offering given by His Holiness Bhakti Vigyan Goswami Maharaj, all spoken from the heart and also with lot of important conclusions. So today I would like to speak more or less some things that I had said in another Vyasa Puja ceremony in which I had participated some days ago. And I had basically reflected on the qualifications of a spiritual master, and one of those qualifications is that he is a perfect follower of his guru. So one who is a perfect disciple can be a perfect guru. If one is not a perfect disciple, then one cannot be guru. So in the life of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, we see this exhibited time and time and time again, and he has been doing this from the first day that he came in contact with ISKCON and he decided to take shelter of Srila Prabhupada. He was in India at that time and he was asked to go back to America, and then he joined New Vrindavan Farm Community, which was in its very early stages at that point in time. Now, some of you may have been to New Vrindavan and perhaps you have seen many nice facilities. Okay, I'm getting some message that the sound is low. Okay, I don't know. It's the highest. Can you all hear me? Okay. Okay. Yeah, so now you can see the lotus temple, I mean the Srila Prabhupada's temple is there, and the regular temple, so many other buildings. There's quite a lot of development that has happened. But when Srila Radhanath Maharaj went there in the beginning, there was really nothing except for some log cabins. And there were some temples. There was a small temple, the main temple, and another small temple. And he was given the service of milking the cows and also of going on top of a hill and staying there and worshipping some deities. And no one else came in that temple. It was very rarely frequented by anybody else. So he would live there all alone. And he had to do the entire deity worship for that temple. The deities were small, but the standard was quite high. He had to do 6 offerings, all the aratis, all the cooking, and everything that is required for the worship of the deities. So he did that every single day. And remember that he had to take a bath several times a day, because he was constantly doing an arati or an offering or something. And even in winter, when it goes far below freezing point, and there was no hot water facility available, no geysers, no fuel, and he would have to sometimes go and bathe in ice, or maybe some snow, just rub some ice or something like that. So that was the kind of situation in which he served in his early days. And he sometimes talks about it. And it is very hard to expect devotees in this day and age to follow this kind of rigorous service schedule. And after doing all these offerings, yet with an aratis and dressing of the deities, etc., the full deity program for the day all alone, and then he would still have to chant his rounds, and he would get time to read some books. So he would do all of this alone, without association. So it is very hard to find these days devotees with this kind of a spirit of surrender and a service attitude. And he did all this without complaint. Today it is hard to find people who can perform any given service for any given length of time, because they want to keep changing their services. They don't have the stamina to continue a service for long. Even if it's a given service in a day, they don't want to do only a small amount of service in the day. But we see from Srila Radhanath Maharaj's example that he was totally absorbed morning to night. He had very few hours of sleep, and he would continue his life like that. So it is this kind of austerity, this kind of surrender, this kind of sincerity which devotees today cannot probably imagine even what to speak of do, that indicates the kind of person he was and is today. So the kind of simplicity that he had. And of course, that kind of life has its own peculiar type of happiness despite the austerities. So he got the taste for that kind of simple and austere living from his early days in New Vrindavan with the cows and with the deities, etc. There is one very famous picture in which we see Srila Prabhupada walking in front, and Radhanath Maharaj, at that time he was a brahmachari, he was walking with a plate, an arati plate, on the side. And that remains one of the very famous pictures of the New Vrindavan project at that time. Of course, Maharaj was very young at that time. He may have been just in his probably early 20s or something. So those days are something special. Maharaj many times talks about his early days. Used to, I don't know if he has been doing so lately. One humorous incident that I remember him mentioning is that in summer they used to have apples growing on some trees on one of the hills. So there was one devotee who didn't want to go through the trouble of plucking the apples every time offering them to Krishna, because it was quite a botheration. Every time you have to take the apple and then keep offering again and again. So then he, in his mind, he offered the whole mountain to Krishna so that there would be no further problems in eating apples. So then he could just directly pluck the apple from the tree and just eat it straight away. So naturally there was some issue there other devotees had. So some years after that, then he, after he had done this service for several years, then he was asked to go out to the universities and preach. So he did that with his full heart. And even though he did not have formal university education, but because he was so sharp and so witty, and he had such good grasp of the philosophy, and he was a very good presenter, and also because of the Vaishnava qualities that were naturally visible in him, he became very successful. And professors and students who were materially very, very highly educated all became very much impressed with his presentation and his devotional personality. So it goes to show that even if one is preaching to very, very, shall we say, materially educated people, one does not oneself have to be very, very materially educated. And I know of several other examples of devotees like this. But Srila Radhanath Maharaj is much more than a materially educated person, even in the material realm. Leave aside the spiritual education, in which he is very, very expert and very well versed with all the nuances in understanding and presenting it. But even materially, his intelligence and his clarity of thought is very sharp, and he understands things, he picks up things very fast. So, you know, the combination of all these different qualities has made him so successful today. During his college preaching days, there was one incident that happened, a humorous incident again, which he narrated one time. And that is about one devotee, a Prabhupada disciple called Mahabuddhi Prabhu. So Mahabuddhi Prabhu is a Kshatriya kind of a personality. And he was a worshipper of Lord Narasimhadev. So when Maharaja was on tour preaching, one time he got the message that there was some rumor going on that Mahabuddhi Prabhu had left his body. So those days, of course, there was no Facebook and WhatsApp, etc., no emails. But word of mouth and maybe some telephone, and somehow the word would spread. So one time at some place, he got a telephone call, and when we answered, then the voice said, "I am Mahabuddhi, thus here." So at that time, Radhanath Maharaj heard it. He was really surprised. And he said, "Mahabuddhi Prabhu, you know, it just came out of Maharaj's mouth. I thought you were dead." So then Mahabuddhi Prabhu immediately replied, "You know, I'm sorry to disappoint you." So of course, that was just a joke. So anyway, in those days, there were so many such experiences he had. He would sometimes tell the devotees about his experiences. One incident at an airport that happened when I was traveling with him, this was many, many years ago. We were both traveling to some place, and we were in the same flight going together. And we were sitting waiting for the flight to take off. And after we had checked in, gone past the security, Maharaj was carrying his, we were at the waiting lounge, I think. So he was carrying his sannyas danda. So then one Western lady, American lady or something, she came up to Maharaj and asked him curiously that, "Is this a fishing rod?" So then immediately Maharaj cited, from the Bible, where Jesus Christ speaks about that he's fishing for the conditioned souls in this world, to fish them out of the world and take them back to Godhead. So he said, "Yes, this is a fishing rod," and he quoted. And that lady also appreciated very much. And I was also very, very happy to hear that answer that came so pat. And on another occasion, I remember he was asked, this I heard from another devotee, I wasn't present there, that somebody asked, a reporter or somebody asked him that, there is a proverb in English that behind every successful man there is a woman. So who is the successful man, a woman behind you? Now, this question was being asked of a sannyasi. So everybody was waiting what answer he will give. And then he answered without any pause. He said, Srimati Radharani. And then everyone was, very happy and struck with wonder to hear this answer. So, also, I remember another incident many years ago in the early days of Chopati. I had started preaching in a medical college, and in the first program that we had, there were about 450 students that came. So I gave the lecture. I was very, very happy that, this program was so successful. And then in the next month, when His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was in Bombay, then I invited him to come for the lecture. This was the early days. He was not staying in Chopati for that long in those days. He used to come, stay for some time and go. So then I organized the program at a time and he would be there. And I told him so much about the program that last time 450 students came and he was really happy. And he was, so I said, I've organized another program. And I got carried away and I told him, I think this time we can expect more than 450 because it was such a successful program last time. So I really raised his expectations like anything. So he was also there coming with all the expectations that there will be 500 at least, if not anymore. So when we landed up there, there was only one devotee. One, not 100, only one devotee. So then Maharaj is also just looking to see, he was quite amused by the whole thing. So I was very embarrassed. What should I say? I've spoken so much about the whole thing and must have boasted or something like that. So Krishna, said, okay, you better become a little humble. So then, and then now one student came. So then anyway, we sat in a small room. The whole hall had been organized. Everything was done. Prasadam for 500, 600 people had been organized. And naturally, then I told the devotees who were accompanying me to just do food for life and distribute the prasadam. So prasadam distribution was not a problem in the college. But I was thinking maybe Maharaj will be very disappointed and he will wonder what's going on. But Maharaj was actually quite amused. He found the whole thing quite funny and, so I was quite relieved at his response. And then it was also a lesson that goes to show that, we may think we have made people devotees, but actually we don't make anybody a devotee. We may preach and because of the preaching somebody may hear and, get a little influence, but actually it is Krishna in the heart. And that person also has had his or her, sanskars from the previous lives and this lives. So we just happen to be in the right place at the right time, that's all. So, but then this one devotee, the one boy who had come, who became a devotee, then we started programs in his room in the hostel and then that became a very successful program. After that, every week we would have programs there. But that initial thing was a great embarrassment. But Maharaj also had been a preacher himself. So then on the way back, he was then discussing how a preacher has to be detached. You should not be attached to the fruits of your results. Of course, these efforts we hear, karmanya vadhikaraste, etc. But when it comes to actually preaching seeing that, last time I had so many and this time hardly anybody has come. So one really has to be very Krishna conscious to understand what is going on. So Maharaj spoke at length and he kind of pacified me and said, don't worry, this is Krishna's nature. He does this to his devotees. So one must be detached from the fruits of one's preaching. And eventually, of course, that turned out to be a successful program afterwards. So we never know Krishna's ways. So I learned some nice lessons from Maharaj. He was very kind. He you know, he took it very sportingly, and he was quite amused, and he made light about it, of the whole matter. So anyway, there are several such incidents that come to mind. But I would like to conclude by just speaking on the point of what are his teachings, because several times devotees ask me that, what do you think are the main teachings of him? What does he want? What are his main instructions? Of course, he has given many instructions, many, many instructions. One time in 1990, I had sent him a letter, maybe it was 89, I think. No, yeah, 89. I had sent him a letter giving a report on the Brahmachari Ashram and what was going on. And at that time, he gave a reply. In those days, there was no email, so we would have handwritten letters and we would post it and all that. So then he gave a reply in which he pointed out 10 points that should be there for a brahmachari, or how brahmachari should be in the ashram. And then I showed it to the other brahmacharis, and till today in Chaupati temple, that continues to be the 10 guiding principles, which all the brahmacharis who come into the ashram, they see those 10 points. So I was struck because of the clarity of thought that he had put into this. It was a brilliant mind with deep understanding of the philosophy and practice of Krishna consciousness who could come up with such clear thinking with those 10 points of what a brahmachari should be. So he has many, many instructions, but when people ask, when devotees ask, what do you think are the most important or essential instructions, I can think of two which I would say are by far the most essential. The first and most important, which we will find him saying it over and over again, almost in every lecture, and that is that one must be a servant of the devotees. This is one point that gets repeated so many times because he wants to give emphasis to this. And this includes everything, naturally, how to be a Vaishnava, how to be humble, how to be tolerant, how to be forgiving. If one considers oneself the servant of the devotees, then there's no question of ego, no question of pride, no question of self-interest. You know, one has to learn all the other Vaishnava qualities that come. So this I think is his number one instruction, as far as I can see. And the second one is that one must take shelter of the holy names of Krishna. So I think he has demonstrated both these principles in his own life, through his words and through his actions as well. So the way he chants the kirtans, he puts his full heart into it, the way he chants his japa, you know. So the focus on the holy name and taking shelter of the holy name, not simply chanting, but taking shelter of the holy name, is very important. Nama grahana and nama shraya. So nama grahana is to accept the holy name and to chant. But nama shraya kori jatane tumi thakaha apuna kaji, as Bhakti Vinod Thakur has said, that one should be exhausted of all the material activities and take complete shelter of the holy names. So he taught that, and he emphasized it so much, and he exhibited it in his own life. So these are the two most important teachings that I can see amongst all the other numerous gems that he has given to the devotee community and to the world. So I'm very happy and honored that I got a chance to speak something to all the assembled devotees here. And with this, I think I better conclude, because now the other part, rest of the program is to happen. His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bol. Hare Krishna.